freedom fiends. Tasing you with liberty while calming the hamster in your brain. Government Ebola virus making zombies out of your friends. The freedom fiends have the antidote. And it's always made of liberty. Regular host Michael Dean couldn't be with us tonight. He's become unstuck in time and is falling at the speed of light through wormholes in the Twilight Zone. Tonight, hosting the fiends is me, Derek J. from DerekJ.me. And on the other end is Bill Bupert of ZeroGov.com. Hey, Bill.
Hey, that would be me. How are you, Derek?
I am superb this evening. I'm in a sing-songy, happy mood. How about you?
I am. As a matter of fact, I really enjoy musicals.
Yeah? You got a song on your heart? I know I do. That first All line always gets me going. And I was singing karaoke last night with a few friends, and that also got me super inspired about peace and freedom. We were choosing different peace songs, and the first one that I chose was It Isn't Nice. Do you know that one by Malvina Reynolds?
I don't know that one.
Oh, it's so old. It's I guess it's from the 60s or maybe even earlier, but it's about the civil rights activism that became not so nice, you know, blocking doorways and going to jail. These are not the classic ways to petition government to change, but the nice ways always fail, as the line goes. So it's a really inspiring song that tells me there's sometimes a little more to do than just writing your congressman if you want real change to happen.
I think that's most certainly the case. Writing your congressman. I mean, the other day I posted something that said to the effect that voting is simply where you put your leash in the mouth and take it to your master for a walk.
Oh, that's
what it comes down to.
That's horrible imagery. I hate to imagine myself like on my knees offering this leash to a government master. Ugh, so icky.
Well, there's where we live.
Well, what about If I Had a Hammer? You know that one?
I know If I Had a Rocket Launcher.
What would you do if you had a rocket launcher?
Well, it's Bruce Coburn's song. Bruce Coburn is a left liberal, and it was popular, I think, in the 80s or the early 90s. And it was about defending the Sandinista communists from American imperialism in Central America.
Whoa. And was that, catch me up on the history, because I wasn't around. What was going on then? Was that a song about history, or was that actually happening at the time?
No, it was a reaction to what was going on with the United States at the time in the 1980s, when the Sandinistas took control in 79 after the Somoza government in Nicaragua was overthrown. And as a result of that, there was a huge left-wing sympathy wave that was rolling for nearly a decade in the United States in support of the Sandinistas and Fidel Castro and the greater communist revolutionary movement in the area.
Ooh, so that sort of shows that it cuts both ways. Like, I love freedom songs or songs that get people motivated about philosophy and ideas, but it can sort of work against us sometimes because sometimes songs are popular about fascism and about supporting dictatorships.
Well, certainly. I mean, a lot of songs came out of the Spanish Succession Wars in the 1930s, where the Soviets and the Germans were fighting, you know, with the Lincoln Brigades and such, and you had communist versus fascist. There was all kinds of badly made music at the time, although one would be hard-pressed to find a more, I think, resilient, if not heroic, song like the Soviet Internationale. I mean, while it represents sheer, unadulterated, tyrannical evil, it's a beautiful song nonetheless.
Yeah, were there any freedom songs that actually inspire you that aren't about fascism but are really about freedom?
There are. There Stephen Stills' song called Treetop Flyer about drug smuggling, and another one called Copperhead Road. You're familiar with that one?
No. What's that
about
one?
Copperhead Road is a country song. I think, I can't remember the artist, but it's a country song concerning a guy who gets back from Vietnam and finds something more lucrative than running liquor and making liquor to produce, and that would be marijuana. And it's all about his evolution in that freedom. But, you know, everyone's seen that movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, with the great bluegrass music and folk music inspired in there. Well, you'll find that there are festivals out there where they call themselves not folk music, but old time music. And old time music is very much revolving around that liberal collectivist ethos that Seeger and Peter, Paul, and Mary and the rest of the folk singers from the 50s, 60s, and 70s would sing about, where they were actually praising that kind of society that you and I rebel against.
Well, it kills me to hear you say that, Bill, because these are the people that I grew up listening to. They inspire me. I sing their songs today. But I like to think that when I'm singing their songs, you know, I'm pushing the right message. I mean, the lyrics don't change. It's the hammer of justice. It's the bell of freedom. It's the song about love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. I mean, what's wrong with that? You're going to say that's a commie song?
But the thing is, Derek, Rage Against the Machine, for instance, it's a great band musically, orally, and, you know, some great lyrics and such. But one of the band members is a proud a ball cap wearing communist who has communists on his ball cap. They celebrate Che. They celebrate all kinds of communists, from the Maoists to the Soviets to the Kampucheans in Cambodia under Pol Pot and all of that, because they think that that is the savior. You know, the music rocks, but if you listen to the message, then the message doesn't support freedom. You know, if I measured my entire musical oeuvre and library, whether CD or MP3, by their political or philosophical affiliation, I wanted it only aligned with freedom, what would I have, 3 CDs?
Yeah, well, I want to engage the music community more. Like, there has got to be some true freedom songs that come out of this next generation or this era, this right now. This is what's happening, where people are saying, you know, they're turning to independent media. They love the underground news, and they're ready for some new rockin' actual freedom. We don't need no stinking badges type freedom songs that everyone could really get behind. You know, they had simple lyrics, and they passed along the ideas of self-ownership and peace. I mean, ending the war, the songs that came out of the Vietnam War are some of the most touching, you know, because these people had their lives at risk. I think that's what motivated the generation in the 60s and 70s.
Well, I do too, but it's no mean coincidence that once the draft dissolved, so did the protests against the Vietnam War that would continue being a human meat grinder for 3 years after that. So I think that they were much more self-interested than they let on to be. Now, that doesn't mean that there's no hope for freedom-oriented music. There's Revolution, Inc., which is sort of like a Rage Against the Machine in a very libertarian vein. And there have been songs in the past like Mike and the Mechanics' Silent Running and some of the others that I talked about, like Copperhead Road and Treetop Flyer, that actually do speak to supporting individual atomistic freedom that you and I would appreciate, and probably those in the audience.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if there's even like a Total Liberty label or something, because, you know, when we were singing all of these songs at karaoke, everyone brought their own little mix and flavor. There was some Pennywise song about freedom that I had never heard before that was awesome. Totally not a genre that I listened to most of the time. It was like harder punk sort of stuff. And there are all of these different songs. They need to be collected somewhere. So I did a little blog post about all of the freedom songs that inspire me, and I did mention people like Pete Seeger. But then I'm troubled by the fact that you're right. Like, all of these people are total commies, and lending them tribute is sort of lending those ideas tribute.
Well,
that's troubling.
You know, the old country where you put the senior instead of the junior behind their names, when you look at Merle Haggard, who was quoted as saying, I think this was in the past year, he said, when I got out of Folsom Prison, I think he was in California, when he got out of prison in 1960, he said he had more freedom as a parolee than he has in America now.
Wow.
And Johnny Cash also riffs on the same idea, where Johnny Cash, I think if one were to put the Circle A on a really famous star, you could most certainly put it on Johnny Cash.
Well, in that vein, you know, Johnny Cash, he reminds me of like Bob Dylan. This isn't a freedom song in particular, but speaking of jail, you know the song Hurricane by Bob Dylan? It's about a boxer who's falsely accused of committing a robbery and murder.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it's like a long ballad song, and I sang that one for karaoke, thankfully, with the help of the lyrics up on the screen. And some of the other activists had to admit that they were, like, ashamed. They didn't know that song. But that's a perfect... I mean, what was that, the 70s, where Bob Dylan's talking about, you know, the violence inherent in the system, the way they protect their own, the way there's, like, racism inherent, and all of that was totally exposed. I think that the people who grew up listening to that kind of music, it has an effect on the next generation. Like, the fact that my parents listened to the Peter, Paul, and Mary and Pete Seeger and were playing that when I was a kid, I feel like it lends a more peaceful attitude, pro-peace, pro-freedom attitude for the next generation. Like, I was raised listening to that, so now I'm more pro-freedom. Don't you think?
You know, I don't, Derek, and I don't think so for this very reason. I think that you hear so many people who talk about, yes, we want peace in the world, but these people who talk about that they want peace in the world, who we see in the musical communities or the news communities or whatever the case may be, the peace that they want is they want foreign policy to be a little less militant and vigilant for corporate interests and things like that.
How do you know?
But they don't want to put any stop whatsoever to the kind of violence that is imposed domestically to form these perfect communard societies that they envision.
I don't know. I don't know. How do you know that? How do you know that they don't want the abolition of government totally?
Because, well, number one, they certainly don't sing about it. And number two, when you have organizations like Revolution Inc. and Poker Face and maybe, what was it called? Trying to think of the name of it, but it was one other band. But that's it. For every band like that, there are hundreds of others that don't, that want the maximum state.
What sort of freedom songs do you love? What inspires you? Do you know any total liberty bands from history or present?
We'll check it out.
We shall overcome.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Songs, freedom songs, revolution songs, peaceful evolution songs. Hey, Bill.
Hey.
So we're talking about the peaceful revolution songs throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, and today. And I think some of these songs need to be rewritten and repopularized, turned into total liberty songs and made into a free album for download on the internet.
I agree 100%, and I don't want to give short shrift to the new stable of liberty-oriented artists that are out there. I mentioned Revolution Inc. and Poker Face. There's Lindy. There's our very own Jordan Page, I think, who was out at Pork Fest. There's Porter Robinson. There's Rebel Fire. There's Steve Lee. I mean,
They're
out there, but they're just not that popular.
So they need our help to get a little more play, and I got to step up and include some more of their music in everyday activities. You know, I think that music has the power to change people, to change their ideas about the state, about the way they live their lives. Music has a lot of power, and if we're just using it to twerk, then we're missing out on a lot of opportunities.
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, I listen to classical music almost exclusively, or what one more appropriately calls concert music, because classical music is actually a subgenre in that entire 1,000-year lineage. But I listen to that in my car for the most part, and the majesty of it is just astonishing. I feel the same way about opera. I feel the same way about jazz, which is my first love, to include vocal jazz, which I really enjoy. But, you know, it's like I said before, if I look at my total music library and I use my philosophical conviction to define who will be in my library, I'm going to be lucky to have a dozen CDs.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's true. Sometimes one has to make a distinction between one's favorite artists and one's favorite artists' ideals, because they sometimes are messy. Like, I love John Waters of Pink Flamingos fame and some of the art that he creates, but then he's got these wacko ideas about freedom and fascism that just don't jive with me. So hopefully
he's a totalitarian, John Waters.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Like so many in Hollywood. Like, you know what? Here's what baffles me, Derek. And maybe you can shed some light on this.
Sure.
Why is it, whether it is the liberal intelligentsia, the gay intelligentsia, the Hollywood intelligentsia, they have an almost childlike reverence for the power of the state and an almost amorous attraction to bigger and bigger government.
I have some ideas,
but I want your ideas.
Okay, so why I can take a stab at it. So why do these oppressed classes feel like taking control of the biggest bully in the room and directing it towards their will? Why, oh why, could that be? I feel like it's probably because they feel like they've been oppressed their whole lives, and now they finally are tempted with the ring of power. And they're saying, oh, but if only I wear the ring, then I will steer the government towards the right means. But they're wrong, Bill. They're wrong.
Yet history shows repeatedly, for instance, with the gay intelligentsia, that whenever they embrace these maximum states, those maximum states come back and they treat them in the most horrible fashion, which potentially leads to death in a lot of cases. Yet they're doggedly determined to support these prison states.
Prison states.
Such as
they do.
Cambodia, China, Soviet Union, now Russia. I'm baffled. For instance, 1.6 billion Muslim adherents around the planet who happen to belong to that religion, and then we hear from the gay intelligentsia. For instance,
what do you mean by that? You've used that term now three times. The gay intelligentsia, huh?
Yeah, these are the opinion makers. Much like you would have opinion makers. Let's suppose that they're liberals, or they're collectivists, or they're Democrats, or they're even Republicans, or they're even neoconservatives, or paleo Republicans, or paleo conservatives, whatever the case may be. These are the people whose voices are used disproportionately to represent large swaths of people who remain silent.
Oh, but they don't speak for everyone. They don't speak for me.
I agree 100%. But now you tell me this, Derek. You tend to be the outlier as far as that's concerned. Is that not correct?
No, it's not correct. And I've done an informal study to this regard. You know, are the gays really as concerned about gay marriage as the mainstream media will make it seem? No, we're not. My informal poll results say we don't care about gay marriage. It's just the mainstream media trying to push their agenda. More power for the centralized government. More power for the centralized scrutinizer.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to
spy on you and
keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially
do not want you to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Oi, oi, oi!
with a freedom antidote. It is the Freedom Fiends here with you, Bill and Derek J.
Annelids.
Annelids, worms. What's going on? We're talking about freedom songs and the best of the best freedom songs there are. You mentioned in between this last break, you sent me a link, and it included at the top of the best list of libertarian songs, the Beatles' Taxman.
Taxman.
I had never considered. That's a great one.
Absolutely.
Everyone
gets
that.
War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Ooh, yeah, of course. That's a classic. That should come to the front of everyone's mind when you start thinking about anti-war songs. But Taxman, that totally took me by surprise. That's one I listened to as a kid, never even thought, you know, it was way before I paid taxes of any kind. But I could get it. I knew Bible stories about taxmen. This is an old concept, so that's an effective song.
But you know what? What are taxes? Taxes are a levy that is violently imposed upon your neighbors and yourself. And if you agree to it, what you're saying is that you're agreeing to theft and robbery because that's what taxation is, despite all the pretty words they put around it.
Hey, and also during the last segment, we ended up talking about gays and their support, but like, it's not a full effort, their support of gay marriage. Like, and what it seems to me...
And I don't support, just so it's clear, I don't support gay marriage or heterosexual marriage as far as it being sanctioned by the state, much like I don't support government education. Well, as a matter of fact, I don't support any government programs.
That is a very consistent position to hold. And that's one that really took me by surprise. I used to be a fundraiser for the ACLU, and we were fundraising on this issue of gay marriage, and I was in a city around my hometown. And one man took me by surprise. He had a family with him. He had some kids and a wife. And I was asking him, oh, hey, you, looks like you support gay marriage. Come talk to me. He was like, well, yeah, I support gay marriage, but I support all marriage. And I don't think the state should be involved in any of it. It blew my mind.
That just clarifies it. I mean, that's the kind of catharsis and exegesis that people get where they clear away all the clutter that's been put in our minds through government education, media programming, whatever the case may be. You know, we talked about this in another show, Derek, where once you take the lens off of being a Republican, a Democrat, a communitarian, whatever it is, and you simply look at this as a power play where you have all these people vying to have power over others, it clarifies it in such a singular fashion.
Well, it's a little scary for me because I was a young person in college. I joined all these organizations fighting for social justice and the human rights campaign, I think, being one of them that I regret being a part of. Because, you know, I think that... So I get told this lie that is, you know, you need the government to save you from all of these injustices. And it's never told... You know, where did these injustices come from? That's never brought up, but I need the government. I know the solution. The solution is more government. The problem we're not so sure about, but the solution is clear, more government. So I wish that gays collectively, or maybe what you would call the gay intelligentsia, would sit down for a minute and just say, actually, I think it's the government who created this problem of us not being able to visit each other in hospitals or being able to share our insurance or being able to pool our finances. All of these restrictions actually come from government. So how could government be the solution? How could more rules help anything? It just seems bizarre.
Even the log cabin Republicans suffer from some of the same myopia that you hear from the Democrats when it comes to that, because they do say, if we're in charge, we can get the government to be more benevolent. Well, benevolence and government can't be used in the same sentence unless you're discussing opposites.
Yeah, but how willing are you to grab control of the reins of government to help people in the moment, right? Because there are these gays who are on their deathbeds, who don't have the freedom to visit their lovers. And what do you do about that? I mean, don't you want a little bit of more government in the short term so that these people can have happy... healthy relationships to the end?
No, I don't.
Oh,
not at all.
That is painful. Because I don't know. I'm willing to compromise a little bit. I'm willing to compromise.
You know what? I think we've compromised for 5,500 years, and I think we've had enough.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I feel like that answer, while I know that you have compassion for your fellow man, it sounds like you don't.
Well, of course, that may be the way the mainstream media would interpret that, because they would interpret my inability to come to terms with taxation as nothing more than theft and violence as meaning that I'm just ill-educated or uninformed. But I'm the most informed, because I think that compassion comes from self-interest and not from altruism. I think altruism and putting any word but I in front of the word should leads to the most horrific circumstances that humans can do to each other.
Ooh, wow. What a cool way to put that. So any other word besides I should. Yeah. I often hear people, I started a garden, a peace garden outside of where I live. And
excellent.
It's sort of a communal garden where I've encouraged my friends and neighbors to take part, you know, feel free. It's everyone's, and we can all eat from it when it's harvest time. And I'm noticing that it's not working the way I intended.
That's why the pilgrims almost starved when they first came over, because they had that kind of almost Etzioni style communitarianism, where a lot of the freeloaders said, hey, you know what? If I can not work and I can still eat, why should I work? Much like in the old Soviet Union, where they said, you pretend to pay us and we'll pretend to work. The same thing occurs here.
Well, you're saying any other word before should, other than I, you know, it's inappropriate. And I agree with you. I had never really considered that. Someone said to me earlier today, you should, or there ought to be something to that effect, more lights on this garden, or you ought to space these differently, or you ought to grow this or that other vegetable, or you should have started this earlier. It's lots of.
And if he said, Derek, I should, and Derek would say, I'll help.
Right, exactly. If it was
exactly,
you know, I had three shovels out there today, Bill, and I was the only one using one, and it's like it oughtn't have been that way. It shouldn't have been that way. I should have, I don't know, what, inspired people a little better to pick up a shovel?
Well, that's not your fault, though, Derek. I carry a gun with me wherever I go, and some people will ask, why do you carry that? And I say, because I find it immoral to outsource my self-defense to others without their consent.
Ooh.
In other words, why should I be presumptuous enough to think that someone else is going to protect me and I won't protect myself? Why should Derek be presumptuous enough? And I'm not criticizing here, Derek. Why should you be presumptuous enough to think that you're going to bring three shovels out there and that two more people are going to step up and share in the work with you side by side?
I don't know. I guess it's a little too presumptuous of me. I'm glad you brought up the issue of firearms and defense. Because
good.
I was recently attacked, Bill, in my hometown.
What?
Yeah, like literally attacked. It's something that I had never experienced before, really, in my whole life. I've been mugged before while living in Philadelphia, but this was a very different experience from that. When it was a mugging in Philadelphia, the person just wanted my money. It wasn't clear to me whether or not they had a gun. They sort of insinuated with their using their clothing and their jacket, but it's never clear. And so I just handed over my money, and that was that. You can make more money, not a big deal, but you can leave with your life. Then this week, I was filming a trial or an arraignment of a local man who was accused of pushing another man into a fountain. He badly hospitalized this young man. It was pure aggression. It was out of nowhere. It was not a two-man fight. It was a totally one-sided fight. He pushed the man into a fountain. The man never had an opportunity to defend himself. And so now he was on at an arraignment for this charge of second-degree assault. And I decide, you know, I'm going to follow this guy. As a local news independent journalist, I'm going to follow him once he's outside of the courthouse and just see where he goes. And I'm not like stalking him. I've got my camera and my tripod, and I just wait for him to leave and then follow with my camera lens. Well, he didn't like that, and him and his buddies decide that they're going to advance towards me as I'm walking back home, and five of them surround me and knock the camera to the ground. The battery breaks, and then I take out my cell phone, start live streaming with a Bambuser app. So now I'm live streaming. I'm capturing this whole attack happening, describing what's going on around me, and then they grab the phone and smash that to the ground too. Now I'm helpless. I've got no video camera. I'm completely alone. I'm surrounded by five bullies. And what do I do? Well, fortunately, at that moment, and I rarely say this, but fortunately, the police showed up. The reason being that they had called the police on me, hoping to get me arrested because I was filming them, and they thought that that was a crime. They're wrong. Assault, however, is a crime, and so when the police arrived, that's what they were investigating. But, Bill, I got lucky in this situation. I'm not always going to be so lucky. I made a lot of mistakes, and I'm looking to hear what your analysis of this situation is.
You know, I don't know enough about it, Derek, because I just heard it. But, of course, you should always partner up when you engage in these kind of activities. You should always have one or more people with you at least. And I do think that you should carry the means to protect yourself, whether that's a gun, a baton, a pepper spray, whatever, or open hand combat.
But here I was just coming from a courtroom. A courtroom, you can't be armed with anything. I can't have a knife.
Well, you could if you went to your vehicle and you got it out of your vehicle after you had secured it in there before you went into the courtroom.
Sure, sure. That's an option. You know, I guess there is always a way, right? I was limited.
There's always a way, but I would say that the more people you have around you when you're in that situation, the better it's going to be, because groups tend to be a little safer than individuals do, especially when it comes to predators. When you were just relating this story to me, I was wondering, when you originally told me these five people had done this to you, I was wondering if they were wearing badges or not.
No, and most people ask me that question. It's just the company I keep. But no, these were unbadged thugs, just your standard type. But I want to know what I should have done. What have I done wrong? What did I do right? What would you do in a similar situation? Have you ever had to defend yourself?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hamster in your brain. Welcome, Freedom Fiends. We reconvene. So I was the victim of an altercation, an assault, a double assault recently, and I handled it poorly, I admit. I was weak sauce. I was just sitting there filming, and that's what I do when I'm interacting with badged thugs, people who wear uniforms and call themselves the government. But when they're unbadged thugs, what kind of political point am I even trying to make? Just get away. Just get away with your life. Am I right, Bill?
Hey, Derek, I want you to know this. If you're operating at zero failure, you are an underperformer. So if you want to be an underachiever when it comes to that, then you're always going to play it safe. But you press the edge of the envelope, especially the freedom envelope. You have sort of calculated all the risks, but you can't possibly calculate them all of them. And here's the biggest meta return that comes from your experience, is that you and I have a dystopian vision with libertarian paradise, because people are going to fail. People are going to make mistakes. As a matter of fact, people may get injured or killed, but they are free people. As Thomas Jefferson told us, better to live in dangerous freedom than peaceful slavery.
Ooh, I agree with that 100%. Have you ever had a... What's your most dangerous freedom? What have you experienced that was like your most dangerous moment of freedom? Have you ever sped on the road, did like an Autobahn experience?
I did live in Germany and
really?
I did travel on the Autobahn, and it was quite exhilarating.
Wow.
To do so.
Oh, that is so cool. I was just taking a stab in the dark.
I've had a number of other experiences, but I don't think it's germane for me to share them on the radio.
Fair enough. Very good. Thank you for your conservative efforts here.
I'm going to let you take the spotlight when it when it comes to the middle name of danger.
Oh,
Derek,
yeah.
That's you.
All right. I'll handle it, at least for tonight. No, I felt silly. I felt like I did a few things wrong. You're right. Being with others is a good idea, but you can't be with others all the time. It's the same reason people talk about owning firearms or a self-defense weapon or learning a martial art. You can't carry a cop with you everywhere you go. You can't carry a liberty activist with you everywhere you go. So,
you know, my wife practices Agana, which is a form of Krav Maga on steroids, and it's a very effective self-defensive art. But my wife knows, who is a very strong woman, that if she comes against the wrong opponent, who's, let's say, 2 or 3 stone heavier than she is,
sure,
and he's a man, and he cold cocks her, he's going to take her out.
Yeah.
So here's 50% plus of the entire world population subject to that kind of sanction at any time if a man decides to be ungentlemanly of any size or shape.
Yes.
So we all run these risks, but you just, before those risks occur, you take all the contingencies and training in mind beforehand so you're prepared.
Yeah, well, I don't think it would have been an appropriate situation to take out a gun. It would not have been appropriate in this situation. But guns are a great equalizer for situations.
Gosh, I've got to say,
women.
Derek, though, you make my heart sing when you say something like that, because what you show is that responsible gun ownership means that even when you're in danger in the slightest way, it's a very grave thing to take out a gun, and I salute your judgment.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. It's pretty serious. I think a lot of people, I call them gun cleaners, they like to talk about the violence that they would do with guns, but, you know, they don't mean it. They're not really
going to do it. Men's braggadocio and the amount of it is inversely proportional to the actuality.
Well, I don't know. I hope to never find out, but...
Well, let's hope
I
not.
Never, yeah. But I say that because guns are a great equalizer, that there are these women or people like me who are small and I don't have muscles. I don't have any martial arts training. So I am an easy target. But guns make everyone on the same level. Don't you think?
You just identified training opportunities.
Yeah, those are some opportunities. Well, we've got some opportunities for growth here on The Fiends. You know, speaking of guns, there's an LAPD officer who lost his gun recently, and the man who found it was arrested. We're going to talk about that and why the government is just so silly when they try and restrict people's rights to carry a firearm by using firearms. That's no solution at all. Worms.
Analytics.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $5 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Worms. Meow, meow, meow. Hey, hello, Freedom Fiends. We're still tasing you with liberty, working to calm the hamster in your brain. Michael Dean can't be with us. He's feeding all the homeless children of the world. Good for you, Michael. Thanks for being out there doing that tonight. Tonight with me is Bill Bupert of ZeroGov.com. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Derek. I thought that that Michael was in a CDC containment facility because he had contracted Ebola.
Oh!
Or was I not supposed to say that?
Well, those children are in for a world of hurt. That's a shame. Well,
I heard it's quite communicable.
Yes. Well, hopefully all is well here on planet Earth. We're going to hope that our words and messages of peace and freedom reach your ears and have an effect of bringing a little more peace to the world today and every day. And I was just talking about a story of where I was attacked. I tried the peaceful method of just not doing anything. Bill, you recommended Akaido or Krav Maga. It's like...
Well, actually, I simply talked about my wife takes Agana, which is a Krav Maga on steroids, but I took Aikido myself. But
isn't
you
that
have
where
to
you
find
don't,
the discipline?
That's where you don't hurt your enemy, right? You just use their energy and deflect it.
That's not quite true because people can get very hurt. For instance, if you watch the early Steven Seagal movies before he became a human dirigible, you'll see that he used it to put quite a bit of a beating and hurting on people, but what it is, it's non-aggressive and only in this sense, in that you do wait for the opponent to come to you, and then you use the opponent's forward momentum to put their joints and most uncomfortable solution sets.
Uh-oh. Okay, I follow. Well, yeah. Hey, I guess we were leading out with this story out of L.A. where a police officer... who was driving his motorcycle down.
His BMW motorcycle, by the way.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Nice detail. Yes. I didn't pick that up from the story. Well, I read about this from the freethoughtproject.com, where they say an LAPD officer was driving his motorcycle, which now we know is a BMW, down Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in South LA Thursday, when somehow his fully loaded shotgun fell off his bike. According to NBC Los Angeles, the search temporarily shut down streets near West Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard near South Normandy Avenue in South LA. An officer noticed his loaded shotgun had fallen out of his motorcycle holster, prompting dozens of officers to scour the area in search of the weapon. Now, there's a few things wrong with this story right from the get-go, but then this... During the search for the shotgun, an officer was bitten by a police canine. The bite was vicious enough to require emergency surgery on the officer Thursday night. Can you believe it?
I wonder if they shot that dog because they have a very nasty habit of shooting any dogs they come across, especially vicious, aggressive ones.
That would be a high crime, Bill, because that canine has a badge.
That's right.
Badges
and
badge
canines
extra rights.
Can put a man in jail for 35 years.
That's true. That's sick, yes. But that is absolutely true. And, well, I don't
Look,
like to see violence against anyone.
This is just silly from soup to nuts. It really is. The whole thing, number one, why must he carry the shotgun?
Number two, why is there a shotgun on a motorcycle? Are you really going to use that thing, like, pop off of your motorcycle? Like, where do we live? This is L.A.?
Look, they're watching too much TV. They're watching too many police procedurals, and they're believing the hero worship of their particular thin black and blue line profession and believing all the hype and BS that goes along with it, because the reality is that motorcycle cop had no business having the shotgun. He had no business being on that motorcycle, as a matter of fact, with his revenue enforcement. And that canine dog who bit the officer, well, you know, all's fair in love and war, isn't it?
I hate to see violence against anyone. I just don't want to see. But it looks like they're just banging their heads against the wall. As you pointed out, all of it from the beginning to end is inappropriate. Like the police shouldn't be riding in the BMW that they don't even pay for, that the taxpayer's on the hook for. They shouldn't have the shotgun. It's totally unnecessary. They've watched too much TV. You're right. And then to top this all off, the cherry on top of this story is that the next day, the shotgun was found, and Taki Williams, age 43, was arrested for grand theft after officers were able to track down the shotgun just a few miles from where it came off of the officer's bike. So this guy finds the shotgun that this negligent police officer mistakenly leaves on the ground for anyone to pick up. And because he picked it up, he's being charged with grand theft. I don't think that's theft. When you pick something up off the ground.
I don't think it is either, but this is the world that we live in. I mean that, you know, essentially, and this is such a great segue, Derek, for us to talk about the terror state, isn't it?
Yes. Please tell us. This sounds like a company, Terror Unlimited.
Let's get this straight first and foremost, is that linguistically you and I try to be as precise and specific as we can so everybody understands what we're saying. Terrorism is politically motivated violence against non-combatants and civilians.
I think even governments will agree with you about that definition.
As a matter of fact, the POTUS approves of that definition, and so does the U.S. Government Counterterrorism Center.
So
and
you
most
know it's true.
NATO countries. I know for a fact that is true. Now, that being the case, parse that little sentence out. Politically motivated violence against civilians, innocents, and noncombatants. Would one be able to surmise that police behavior in America is politically motivated violence against offenders and non-offenders alike? Like
no.
The man, Mr. Garner, who was strangled to death in New York last week, and those kind of things. The point that I'd like to bring up, And I leave this to your audience to do their own investigation. By the way, I needed to give you a prop for talking about the Free Thought Project. People should visit the Free Thought Project every day to see the latest police brutality news, because they keep a really good tabulation of that kind of stuff going on. Back to the terror state, the point that really concerns me among all the awful things that happened since 2001 and 9/11 is that everyone has to ask themselves this question. What is the government limited in doing if it's trying to protect you from terrorism?
I don't know.
The answer is nothing. There are no limitations on what it does. So,
now, is that a written rule somewhere? I mean, did they write that down somewhere and say, like, hey, we've got no limits now?
Gosh, I don't think they have to write it down. All we have to do is look at their behavior, Derek.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
this is
but
a country
sometimes
that's
they try and legitimize themselves by saying, like, we wrote down a new rule that says we can do anything we want. It's called the Patriot Act.
It's called the Patriot Act. It's called the NSA vacuuming up of every electronic human transaction in the North American continent. It's the Office of Legal Counsel right down to the Waffle House in the Oval Office.
You know,
saying,
I think it's more legitimate when they write it down on paper and say, here's what we're going to do. This is the tyranny that we're bringing to you. At least they're honest about it.
Hey, but they did that with the torture memorandum, didn't they? That came out of the Office of Legislative Counsel.
Yeah, so anyone who wants to know this stuff can just look it up.
They can. And I would also suggest that the Constitution is probably first and foremost the premier instrument for enabling the government to use terrorism as a means of organizing society.
Now, that was a new concept to me just a couple of years ago. I heard an awesome video by John Bush. It's called, like, the Constitution. I don't know. It brought more tyranny than what we had before, the Articles of Confederation. So tell me how you think the Constitution is used to bring about tyranny. It's used to justify it?
Well, you'll notice, and you mentioned earlier in the previous section that you and I were talking to, Derek, that you had worked with the ACLU. Have you noted that in all the ACLU cases, do they ever use the body of the Constitution to defend individual rights, or do they always use the Bill of Rights?
I don't know.
Well, for the most part, from my observations, and I think you can confirm this yourself, they go to the Bill of Rights, because what the body of the Constitution does is it gives the government the engine, the power plant, and the means it needs to create the maximum state that we all labor under today. For instance, I often use the gun control argument as an example of this. If the Second Amendment is this be-all and end-all of protecting individual firearms ownership, then how does one account for the Supremes and all the lower courts approving of the 1934 National Firearms Act, the 1968 Gun Control Act, the 1968 McClure-Volkmer Act, the 1989 Assault Weapons Import Ban by Bush 1, the Nix Check, the Brady Bill, the Assault Weapons Ban, all upheld by the courts, yet the Second Amendment exists? What that means is this: is that the word unconstitutional has no definitive meaning whatsoever in modern America. If that's the case, the word constitutional means an imprimatur and a mark and a license for the government to do whatever it wishes to maintain and expand its power over the citizenry.
Well, it would work if the Constitution had teeth and bit any politician who tried to violate it, but the Constitution is totally powerless. It's just
the teeth
a piece of
in the
paper.
Constitution. The teeth in the Constitution is all about enabling the government to do what it does to the citizenry. There's nothing in the body of the Constitution that protects individual atomistic human beings.
That's pretty weak. I mean, I hear a lot of constitutionalists and conservatives saying to me, "Oh, if only we could get back to the Constitution." And we're there. We're at the Constitution. It's horrible.
You're right. And you're getting it good and hard. But let me talk about that real quick. First 10 years after 1791, when the Constitution is ratified, 3 years later, in 1794, Washington is at the head of a national army to take down tax protesters in the Whiskey Rebellion. 7 years later, we have the Alien and Seditions Act, where the federal government looks out across the entire fruited plain and says, if you criticize or editorialize or say bad things about your federal government, we're going to jail you, or even worse. And then in 1803, in Marbury versus Madison, the Supremes hadn't been given this justification or ability, but they granted onto themselves the ability to be the ultimate arbiter and interpreter of what's right in the Constitution. And it has been a downhill slog ever since for individuals to maintain their liberty and freedom.
I like what you're getting at. I like the freedom angle here. I read an awesome book in jail called Treason. It was about the beginning of the American Revolutionary War and about how the Constitution really didn't secure any freedoms, but brought more tyranny down on the people, enslaved
Amen.
Them without them knowing it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Losing shotguns, freedom songs, terror unlimited, and technology empowering the individual past the point of dependence on government. Here we are on the Freedom Fiends. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Derek.
Worms.
So, Analyds.
So we were talking about Terror Unlimited, my favorite new clothing company. I believe they make the
this
uniforms.
From a man bedecked in sartorial splendor every time I see him.
Well, thank you. I dress up even for radio, you know.
Yes,
and,
you do.
And no, the Terror Unlimited, it's more than just a clothing company. They make uniforms for all your bootlicking organizations. You've got black ties for the CIA, maybe some fatigues for the U.S. Army, all the way down to the LAPD uniforms.
All 19,000 law enforcement organizations in America.
Wow, are there that many?
19,000.
All,
Mark Stevens says there's more, but yeah, 19,000.
All like individual gangs. Some of them even call themselves gangs. I remember who is the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, who was calling his private, he called the New York Police Department his own private army, called it the largest gang in the world.
I loved it. At least it was truth in advertising.
I'm like, dude, you're hitting a little too close to the mark, man. You don't want to be that transparent. People will know what's up. And, of course, he's in hot water recently. I don't know if you saw his ad. Ever since he retired as mayor of New York, he's been on this anti-gun tirade. Well, he's always been on an anti-gun tirade, but this time he's really amped it up. He's thrown his own money towards these advertisements. He's trying to get this idea into people's heads that they should willingly disarm themselves, hand over guns, report on their friends and neighbors who have guns, turn them into the authorities so that the only people who have guns are the government. This is a bad idea.
It's a very bad idea, but it's an idea that Bloomberg and de Blasio and all of his ilk embrace. They hate the idea of individual human beings, tax cattle, being able to defend themselves against their government oppressors.
Well,
it strikes to the very core of their belief system.
They hate it, and that's nothing new. It's been an idea as old as Pol Pot, but way older than that. But
well, let's go back to Alcibiades in Greece. So we'll just take it back 2,500 years. How's
woo,
that?
That's pretty far. Yeah, tell me about them. Were they disarmed?
Well, of course, the Greeks had peltasts and hoplites, which were light infantry and heavy infantry, respectively. But over time, Athens became quite a tyrannical state. But unfortunately, despite all the Hollywood weirdness that you see concerning Sparta, Athens, and all the rest, and all the rage of sandal and sand cinema, in the end, these were nations west and east that were built on slavery as the brick and mortar element of how their societies were formed.
Yes.
So because that was the case, the Helots, of course, were 80% of the population in Sparta. If it weren't for the Helots and that slave population that they were, you could not have had this totalitarian military state that the Spartans were.
Well, so did the Spartans disarm the rest of the population? They're slaves?
Oh, they absolutely. As a matter of fact, if a slave was caught with a weapon, it was a death sentence.
Wow. So but you better know how to use it.
Has that not been universal, though? Think about it.
If a slave is caught with a weapon, it's a death sentence. Well, it's pretty much that way. In the U.S., I know, there's this woman. This is a recent story out of Philadelphia. She was having a birthday party at Atlantic City, which is in New Jersey, but also very close to Philadelphia. And she brought her... She had been mugged the week before, so she went out, got a gun, had a license for it, everything, concealed carry. Everything was perfectly legal in PA. And then as she was driving to her son's birthday party in New Jersey, she gets pulled over for an unsafe lane change or something. And the cop asks her, do you have anything I should know about, any weapons in the car? She says, oh, yeah, I have a gun. I got it last week because I was mugged, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, oh, well, that's illegal here in New Jersey. Oh, and these bullets you've got, they're also illegal. So she is charged with multiple felonies, very serious charges out of New Jersey. And what is that except for disarming the slaves? And I don't mean because she's black, which she just happens to be. I mean the slaves in New Jersey. Everyone is a slave in New Jersey, or everyone who is disarmed is essentially a slave, are they not?
That's exactly what it is. It's an extension of our earlier conversation on the terror state.
Terror Unlimited, where I get all of my fascist clothing. We'll be back. We've got stories of technology empowering the individual past the point of government control.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. RATS is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. RATS was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. RATS is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download RATS free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, we're beaming these words directly into your cerebellum, and we shall overcome, we shall do it peacefully, we shall assert our rights and our freedoms, and we shall live free. Right, Bill?
That's correct, and I'm wishing luck to Michael Dean as he tries to take over for Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. I think that he went over there for a job interview.
Poor guy. Times are tough. He's really hit hard. Although he may have a good time, he may fit right in over there. One never knows.
I think he will. He may even come home with an Oompa Loompa or two.
Well, he may have some Oompa Loompa children of his own. Who knows? So we're talking about Terror Unlimited, the ridiculous anti-gun ad put out by Michael Bloomberg. Well, I didn't actually mention that. I mentioned he's on this tirade against guns, as always. But have you seen his recent ad that he put out where everyone thought it was pro-gun? It's such a bad commercial. It features a woman who is being attacked. The door is being beaten down. She's in her living room with her child. She's on the phone with 911 saying, "Yeah, I have a restraining order against him, and please send the police now." And the man comes in, takes the child, who presumably is his son. It looks like a lover's quarrel, and then shoots the woman. And you just, the screen goes black and you hear the bang of the gun. And most people are watching this commercial and scratching their head saying, "Hey, she should have been armed. That would have gone a lot better for her if she were able to defend herself." And this is supposed to be an anti-gun ad. It just shows how much a person has to contort their thinking in order to continue to fall in line with the state worship view of like, well, people need to be disarmed all the time. It's only the authorities who can bring justice and be trusted with firearms. You know, like the LAPD who leaves their shotguns off of motorcycles.
Look, these people are psychopaths and sociopaths. That's clearly what it is. They are morally bankrupt and intellectually perverse. You know, I often think that collectivism is a form of intellectual drunkenness, where they haven't had a day of moral sobriety since they started thinking that way. Bloomberg is among, you know, some of the worst offenders when it comes to this kind of thing. Here we have this multi-billionaire who makes it almost his sole mission after he gave his mayorship over to the commie de Blasio in New York City to go after people's individual right to defend themselves. And as I mentioned earlier in another segment, don't look to the Second Amendment to protect you. You have to look to your own moral self-defense to do so.
That's right. You know, and I like that you brought up the example of the Greeks who were disarmed way back when. And I like to think that as technology and science march on, as human progress develops, technology is empowering the individual past the point where they can be controlled by governments. So it may have been very easy to control and manipulate people in the days of the Greek bread and circuses or the Roman days. But as we move into the age of new media, the internet, it's harder and harder for this propaganda to work. Like that ad, for example, where Mayor Michael Bloomberg puts out this anti-gun ad. Well, the internet's abuzz with people talking about how ridiculous it is. That wouldn't have happened just 10 years ago.
I agree 100%. What's interesting about all of this, though, is that while that may not have happened then, for hundreds of years now, those who champion individual liberty have been saying, is the state the surveillance state, the technology state? Is the government going to have so much power because of technology that they're going to be able to overwhelm any private use or wielding of surveillance or counter technology so they can retain their freedom?
I don't know.
I really think we have the answer yet.
Yeah, we don't know. But I'm encouraged by people who are willing to use technology courageously at great risk to themselves. There's one man in particular, Tom Zebra. I don't know if you've seen his videos on YouTube, but he has a little drone. And it's not the kind of government drone that Obama uses to destroy children. It's the kind of drone that one uses to capture photons. In other words, use a camera. And he uses the camera to shine the spotlight of accountability on government agents, mostly cops. So he flies this drone above, like, the LAPD in one of his most recent videos. He goes right over their parking lot, and they really don't like that because, you know, you're using technology to hold the police accountable for their actions. They'd like to
think counter-surveillance is called surveillance, and that's what he's doing.
That is what he's doing because, you know, these police, then they start to make up objections about, well, hey, you're not allowed to fly a drone above us because it's trespassing. He's like, well, I'm not on your property. That would be trespassing. They have to come up with all of these new rules, right? Because they're just making it up.
It's incredible how childlike the government really is. But when you think about it, too, you really have to think like a toddler to grasp why Paul Krugman and the rest of the collectivists in the government thinks the economy should work the way they do.
Right, because government's magic. It's Magic Mom who can just provide everything for us, right?
Cause it's not Uncle Sam, it's Uncle Santa.
Yeah, well, it is. And you're right about thinking about it like you have to get into the mind of a toddler, because I think that's where a lot of this thinking originates. Like
I do, too.
Yeah, they
how Paul Krugman got a Nobel Prize of any type. The man is just, he has the intelligence of something lying on its back at the bottom of a pond, making furtive movements every moment or two.
Oh, youch. Another thing that encourages me about people using technology is Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin represents a huge shift away from people thinking like, oh, well, we need the government to do X. Because Bitcoin can do X. A lot of people don't know it yet, you know, the possibilities of what the blockchain technology can do, this global distributed ledger. It's a book of account keeping, and that's one of the prime functions of the government. Or so
look,
they
claim. Bitcoin's going to change the world.
Well, it already is. One of the ways that I've seen it start to change the world is right here in Keene, New Hampshire, from where I'm broadcasting. There is a man who has a Bitcoin vending machine, and he brought this out this weekend to the Cheshire County Fair, where anyone who walked by was able to put in paper dollar bills, stick their phone up to the screen, and receive Bitcoin and walk away. It's completely anonymous, I'm sure the NSA could find some way to track you through your phone, but it's pretty anonymous.
They can't even find Lois Lerner's emails.
Well, yeah, you know, it depends, I guess, to what degree they want to find your identity. But for the most part, I think you're pretty safe. If you're just a regular Bitcoin user, you want to convert some bills to Bitcoin, what's the harm in that? Now, this man is supposed to get some sort of money transmitter license, bit license, this and that, supposed to kiss the ring, bend over, ask permission from government, essentially, to use this piece of incredible technology. A technology which, by the way, does not require your permission, government. It works whether you want it to or not. And so he doesn't ask permission to use this tool, and I like that. I think more people using technology boldly, courageously, to advance human freedom, that's how we're going to outpower the state. You know, you talk about, will the government use technology to its full extent to imprison people, or will the people use it to free themselves? Well, it's up to you, the people, to have the courage to use the technology now without permission. Better to ask forgiveness than permission, I say.
And better to question your obedience than simply to question authority. And it works hand in hand with what you just discussed.
Yeah, so have you ever flown a video drone?
I have not, but I'd love to have one, or I'd love to get the opportunity to give that a try. And I think that any time that you can put the light of day on what cockroaches do behind closed doors or even in public, it's a win for individual freedom.
Why do you call them cockroaches? Don't you think that's antagonistic?
I absolutely do. Thank you.
Well, why would you want to be antagonistic? Don't you want peace? Why are you so mean?
I do want peace, but I want to call things as I see them, and that's the way I see them. I see them as almost a they are vermin on the body politic that don't protect and serve individuals, but protect and serve the rulers. That's why the police exist, because could any political bad actor, be he Bush, Mao, or Hitler, or Obama, deny any individual their freedom and liberty if they didn't have the police to enforce the rules?
Oh, no. They would be laughed out of town.
Exactly.
Who are you making demands? You and what army?
Exactly.
Well, I think that's silly. What about Bitcoin? You use Bitcoin?
I don't use Bitcoin.
Why not?
My oldest son uses Bitcoin, and I'm learning about
it.
Come
on, don't tell me you're too old for this stuff.
I'm not too old for it, and I will learn, but I'm not an early adopter.
My son uses it. It's like, let him figure it out.
I didn't say it in that kind of rickety voice.
Yeah, I need him to reprogram my VCR. I'm just joking with you. I bring that up because the Treasure wallet came out recently, and this is not an advertisement. I don't want it to sound like one, but I do think it's really cool that there's this new hardware wallet. So typically the way Bitcoin works is it's a digital money, and it's just like cash. You have to have some in your account in order to spend it. It's not like credit in that way. And there's a complication with spending it sometimes, where if you don't have an internet connection, it's not going to work. It's money over the internet. So in order to get around this, there is a hardware wallet that has been created. It's been tested for like the last year. A lot of people have been really excited about it, that will be like a USB key. And if I want to send you money to or from your computer or your phone, I can just use this hardware wallet, plug it in, send you the Bitcoin, unplug it, and it's totally not connected to, you know, the internet. It can't get any viruses or anything. It's like next level wallets, next level money. It's the future, and the government can't touch it. That's the best part.
Yeah, I love the concept of doing that absent the internet, because it makes it that much harder for the government to surveil those transactions.
Yes, I think that's one of the biggest advantages. Of course, I'm skeptical that the government can't just figure out who everyone's user IDs are or whatever. I mean, they've got this big dragnet system, right? They're collecting all this data about what people are doing on the internet. You really think they can't figure out what Bitcoin addresses belong to whom? I mean, I don't even bother trying to hide mine.
What you have to remember, though, Derek, is that they can vacuum up petabytes of information all over the earth. It doesn't mean they can analyze it.
Doesn't mean they can analyze annelids either.
Worms.
More about the Treasure wallet and video drones after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from The Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
I'd smash some worms. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Derek.
So, there's been a lot of tyranny talk tonight. Tyranny Unlimited. All the terror happening across the world. But things are going to be okay, right?
I'll tell you why they're going to be okay. It's because Amazon has 2.7 million self-published and published books available to anybody who wants them.
What does that have to do with anything?
Free. Here's what it has to do with. The dissemination of information, whether it's the tens of thousands of libertarian and libertarian-leaning websites that are out there, the books that are available, the Khan Academy offering free courses, MIT and Caltech offering free auditing of every course that they offer at their brick-and-mortar universities over the internet and online, gives us an unprecedented opportunity at this space and time in human history where horizontally and vertically, whatever information you want your hands on and access to, for the most part, unless the government's put a lid on it, you have access to it. So if you want to educate yourself, if you want to get smarter, if you want to do any of these things that you think will advance individual freedom and liberty, all these resources are yours for the asking.
Yeah,
that's what it has to do with it.
Sort of the idea of public libraries on steroids, though, isn't it? It's like,
oh, absolutely. And you can take advantage of it. You mean government libraries, but of course,
right.
In this case, it's available to everybody.
Yes. Yes, thank you for the correction. I sit corrected. Not public, because you can't treat government buildings like they're public buildings. Like, if I go into a Verizon store, I usually don't have to disarm first, but whenever I go into a government building, they always say, leave your knives and your guns in the car and all of this stuff.
Derek, of course they disarm you. The way they treat people, don't you think they would expect the worst behavior from those people coming in?
I suppose they would, yeah.
And, see? And Verizon doesn't.
You get what you prepare for, unfortunately. we're going to be okay, because it's all about information, isn't it? Like, it's always this endless pursuit of more information, better information. I think that's what the stock market's all about, you know, price discovery, all of this information coming down the
Look,
pipe.
No one leverages information better than the free market, despite what the government would tell you.
Worms.
Because the free market, it's individuals that have innovation, not large mobs or groups of people. It's individuals who think with their minds and say, I'm going to build a better mousetrap, I'm going to improve on the way this was done, or I'm going to write a better novel than Thackeray did.
Right. And they have the real incentives to do it. Like
self-interest.
Yes, they have self-interest at heart. Like when I'm planting this garden, I know that I get to reap the benefits of, I get to reap what I sow, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, so, and you know what? You leave those two shovels there unattended. You use your shovel, and whatever you reap, it's yours because you put your sweat equity into it and you earned it.
You know, you may disagree with me about my strategy here, but the Peace Garden is actually a PR stunt. It's a PR move that I'm trying to appear, I guess, a little more communist. Like, I want to give away these vegetables to anyone who needs them in the community. So basically, anyone who's hungry or feels like they could use these vegetables. It's going to be a bit of a social experiment, too. So we're going to see if the vegetables completely disappear or if anyone takes them or what happens. But that's the idea. the vegetables are there for the taking. If you want them, they are yours. And I'm curious to see what happens.
I look forward to seeing the results of that, but I would urge you to look at the historical study of the Pilgrims, who tried to do something of the same thing, and it didn't end well for them.
Yeah. So what do you propose instead? Should I just sell the vegetables and then retain private property rights over them?
Yes,
then I would have the incentive to actually make sure that each tomato and strawberry reaches peak perfection.
Absolutely. Not only peak perfection, but through the price, you're able to efficiently allocate it.
The price discovery mechanism. Information. Freeing humanity. Freedom songs. Bringing peace and joy to people's hearts and homes. Video cameras bringing transparency to a tyrannical regime. Bitcoin freeing the market and freeing the world. Ask questions, my friends. Well, that does it for the Freedom Fiends tonight. Michael Dean will be back tomorrow. Worms.